From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Hi, friends. Welcome to SpongeBob Binge Pants,
Nickelodeon's official podcast about all things SpongeBob.
I'm Hector Navarro.
And I'm Frankie Grande. And I'm so excited for this week's episode where we will be discussing Bubble Stand and Ripped Pants, two unbelievably iconic episodes. And I feel, and Hector, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but like, I feel like I'm just going to keep saying every week an unbelievably iconic episode, you know?
Fingers crossed we get to do this podcast for 12 years and keep it going. But the real fun thing is that while Frankie and I are revisiting this first season, we are going to think every episode is iconic because to us it is. Yeah. And it factually is. They're all so iconic. And if we get to keep doing the show, I'm sure that when we hit seasons 4, 5, 9, 11, that we'll be watching episodes that maybe Frankie and I didn't rewatch as much when we were younger, and we'll be like, these are amazing too. Like, these are great too. So just please bear with us, audience. Let Frankie and I believe that every single one of these is a classic, because it is to us. Yeah. And just let us live in it, man. We're loving it.
And I think you did touch on something, because I don't remember this, but like, obviously when we were kids, there weren't this many SpongeBob episodes. Mm-hmm. And we know Nickelodeon loves to rerun a hit.
Oh, so yeah.
I can't even imagine how many times when I was young, this episode was actually being aired. It was probably aired like once a week for like, you know, a couple years of my life. So let's get into it. Let's start with Bubble Stand.
Bubble Stand.
It's almost like Bubble Stand. Like, oh, I stand bubbles, you know?
Which SpongeBob is a bubble stand.
He certainly is.
On top of being able to build a bubble stand.
Hashtag bubble stand. Use it in all of your tweets, along with SpongeBob Binge Pants. So in the episode Bubble Stand, we are introduced to SpongeBob's love for bubbles, as well as Squidward's terrible clarinet playing. Squidward is having a lovely day playing his clarinet, and of course is annoyed when SpongeBob decides to build and then start to blow bubbles. He offers bubble lessons to his friends, Patrick and Squidward, and of course is amazing himself, and Squidward gets jealous and tries to get in on the fun to some very exciting and very interesting consequences. So let's get into Bubble Stand.
Hey, Squidward, want to blow some bubbles? Only 25 cents.
All right, like I would spend a moment of my time blowing bubbles.
Uh-huh.
Oh, please. I mean, who in the world would pay to blow bubbles?
Good morning.
Frankie, rewatching this, what'd you think? What are your overall thoughts on the classic Bubble Stand episode?
My overall thoughts were, which we were talking about a little bit earlier, is like, I remembered all of the things. Like when he was like, step on your right foot, don't forget it. Ringing around town. I was like, I remember all of this. And double take, three times. One, two, three. And it's like, That was just such an iconic moment. And also, I feel like this is the episode where we first understand that SpongeBob has magic powers. Like, he is Harry Potter. He's underwater, yep, sponge Harry Potter, because you can't do that with bubbles. But like, mm-hmm, and then we find out later that he can create humans out of bubbles and like have family. They can have families and interact with each other. Like, SpongeBob has a wand. Mm-hmm. It is a bubble wand, and he has magic powers.
It reminds me of the amazing film Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Oh my
which
God.
Is this great love letter to cartoon history, where Roger Rabbit gets in handcuffs and he can't get out of them. And then later, the human counterpart in this movie that's trying to help him get out of the handcuffs, like Roger just slips out to hand him something or whatever, yeah, to help him, to assist, yeah, him, to hold it. And he's like, you mean you could have done this the entire time? And he's like, not unless it was funny. Like,
yes!
That's the cartoon logic. The magic that you're describing is SpongeBob can do anything as long as it's funny.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's moments where he's like completely incapable of doing the mm-hmm. simple task that is assigned to him by Mr. Krabs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like becomes this large production. But you're right. If it's funny, then he has magic powers.
If it's funny for him to show up with an impossible spatula that doesn't, yes, exist, he's going to show up with that spatula and he's going to be like, it was the last one on the stand, like last one on the shelf. Like, that's so true. He is magical. And let's talk about some other old cartoons. His amazing bubble blowing did kind of remind me of like the segments from Dumbo, Elephants on Parade.
I was
going
to say Pink Elephants on Parade, and I was waiting
for
you.
Which is scary. It's a trip, but like just the animation, I feel that the animators for this episode could definitely have been inspired by that classic bit of animation from Dumbo. So scary. I know. Nightmare inducing. Too scary. If you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I haven't shown my kids Dumbo yet, check. Make sure they're like 14.
Make sure they're ready. Also, like, it just starts with like the sad mom song and the baby being ripped from her mom. My mother and I used to, baby mine, don't you cry. If I sing that to her now, she will just start like uncontrollably weeping because mm-hmm. it was so sad. Oh my God. But yes, yeah, I do. Absolutely what I thought about when very hysterically SpongeBob blows that gigantic elephant. And I know you love this part, so you can tell you what Patrick says, because I know how much you love this part.
He goes, ha, 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 it's a giraffe.
I scream laughed rewatching this last night. Laughed at that.
So do you think Frankie, that is the funniest moment? Would you say that we could award that Patrick moment the funniest moment of this episode?
I think in terms of, I think it's very possible that is the funniest moment. I think my I'll give it to you. But I do
What's the second funniest?
I love the repetition of the prep to blow the bubbles. Yep. And then I love like when Squidward does it perfectly. Like that to me is so funny when he's making the shapes and he's like,
you
know, and he's like doing
like
it
for this.
Yeah. And just like the whole time. And then he screams to blow the bubble. Like he's like, ah, like in just horrible, like anger, frustration, like the way you would scream at somebody if you were having a really bad day in traffic mm-hmm. and they just cut you off. He screams and then it's perfect. The bubble is perfect. Like that to me, it was so funny. That scream, yeah. That scream was hysterical to me.
I think the thing that we both believe is that screaming can be funny when it's done well. You know, when there's a lot of comedy, there's a lot of lowbrow comedy, there's a lot of stuff that's a lot of characters screaming at each other and everything. And sometimes that's funny and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it can get too much. But Nickelodeon and especially these SpongeBob geniuses, they're good at knowing when to hit you with that surprising decibel level. Because that's what's so funny about Patrick laughing is that it's not just a dumb guy laugh, which Patrick is so brilliant at, but it's specifically, it's like kind of sharp and fast because he's
like,
it
pops up and then comes back down.
He's laughing at us. It's not, he's just like, like it's that level. It's
I was
so
going to say Squidward is the Diane Keaton of screams, you know, she's like, and like we're laughing at her because she's just so in control of her
lost
craft.
Yeah, and Squidward has lost it. And again, this is a testament to the voice cast. They're so funny. And to be able to scream and still be funny and be in character and be in a booth, and these are difficult skills. It's not just anybody off the street that can just scream into a microphone. They're so good at what they do. So I agree. So my overall thoughts for this episode are that it is a perfect SpongeBob, Squidward, Patrick dynamic.
Yep.
Like, perfect.
How is this the first episode after the pilot?
Yeah, I know.
How?
It's crazy. It's crazy, right? They hit us with that three-parter first 20-minute episode. Then this comes out. This is 2A and 2B. And it's like, this formula is already perfect. It really is. So, love the episode. Love the funniest moments. Frankie, do you think you could pick a most heartfelt moment, most SpongeBob sweet moment, something that makes our heart grow three times their size, something real nice?
I like when they're chanting for Squidward.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
There's something so nice because Squidward is just so angry and so upset and just wants nothing to do with them. And they're like, Squidward, Squidward, Squidward. Yeah, they're still cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. They don't understand. Maybe they do understand in a certain way where they're just like, you know, this is how we're going to help. And it's by being cheerleaders no matter what our team is going through, right? Even if we are like, it is like, I don't know, I'm going to use a sports analogy that I don't understand. But if it's like 30-0 on the football field, is that a score? You can do that?
Great. Yeah, for sure, okay, for sure.
Cool. So if it's like 30, and like still the cheerleaders stand there and they still cheer, you know, they're still cheering our team on. And I felt like my heart just melted when I saw that because it was so genuine. And it just showed who SpongeBob and Patrick are.
It's so sweet too when Squidward embarrasses both of them. And SpongeBob and Patrick have this feeling of they feel really bad and they, you know, they slump their shoulders and they turn around and they're so shy and they're defeated and they're embarrassed and they walk back into the pineapple. They walk back into SpongeBob's house and close the door. And then when Squidward tries it himself, they're immediately there at the bubble stand ready to support. Yep. And it's not a, I told you so. It's not a sarcastic or, you know, mean-spirited chant. They are going, Squidward, 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 Squidward. Like, they really are so genuine in their support of their neighbor because they're sweet boys and they think that Squidward likes them just the same. They don't understand that he doesn't. So to them, they're like, hey, our third best friend, Squidward, our neighbor here, is joining in and we're going to support him. And it's like they have to bring up another real sweet show that is real popular right now, Ted Lasso. They have the memory of a goldfish. The SpongeBob and Patrick characters have a 16-second memory. They hold no grudges. They hold no ill will towards Squidward. So when Squidward joins in, they're right there to support. You're right, Frankie. That's the sweetest moment. That's pure SpongeBob.
That is so, so sweet. And we've all had our Squidward moments. And I hope that we've all had our SpongeBob and Patrick moments where we've had those, you know, times where we had to cheer on people that maybe we didn't necessarily think believed in themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is. I think they, you know, they're just unconditional love. And Squidward in this moment is just unconditional self-loathing. Yeah. And, you know, and it's like I've seen that play out in my life many times. So it's really nice to have this, you know, kind of real life sad situation played out in a cartoon where we get to like, be like, oh, that was okay. All right. Thanks for the message, you guys, without hitting me over the head with it. Thank you so much. There's a lot of that in SpongeBob.
There's so much of that in SpongeBob. I just rewatched the first SpongeBob movie, the SpongeBob SquarePants movie that came out after three seasons of the show. And a big theme in that, and I think it's a big theme in the show, is that SpongeBob and Patrick may represent childhood and innocence and joy and fun and laughter. And sometimes people in this world will say, hey, you got to grow up.
Yeah.
Hey, we're not reliable. You can't participate in the adult world. You can't participate in this serious thing. And what I love about SpongeBob, what I love about the movie, and what I love about this episode too, is that it's a great reminder of like, no, you can. You can and should allow yourself to play at least every once in a while. And if it weren't for SpongeBob and Patrick, I think Squidward would be even more unhappy. if he was a boring adult living by himself, I think he would be even more unhappy, have no release. It would be very bad for him. So I love that. I think it's great.
We're a perfect example, though, you and I.
Yes.
Of adults who have never stopped playing our whole lives. Like, I don't know if you can't see what Hector is wearing because we're on a podcast and you're not watching the visual. But like, he's wearing a beautiful pineapple shirt. He has his action figures behind him. I'm the same way. Right. I have Pops in my room. I have so many like, you know, like cute little trinkets and toys that remind me of my childhood. And I always, always try to keep a sense of play. And look at us. We are employed adults talking to you guys and encouraging you guys to play in your lives by breaking down SpongeBob. So like, absolutely, we are case in point that like, you know, you can still have that element of magic and joy in your life, well into your adulthood. And I think it makes you a better adult. That's my just personal opinion.
I agree 1,000%, Frankie. You can have both. Okay. I still pay my taxes. I am pretty sure I have a 401k. I do the boring stuff.
I like pretty sure.
Yeah. I'm pretty, like pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I have it. I think it's in my bank account. I don't think I've had to transfer it. Anyway, I could figure that stuff out. I go to the bank. Listen, I go to the bank. I'm an adult.
Same. We're adults, but we still have a lot of fun. And that's, I think, the moral of the story. Sorry, you were asking me a question and I interrupted by talking about how great we are as adults.
Have you used or seen a GIF from this episode?
I know I have. Which one?
And I've also, even before GIFs existed, Frankie, I think we used to quote this in our young lives, is bring it around town. Bring it around town. I have seen that GIF. I've used that GIF. It's so funny. We got to bring it around town. Again, shout out to Tom Kenny and every member of this cast. Tom and Bill are having so much fun as SpongeBob and Patrick. Back to when you were saying when they're cheering Squidward.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're almost making themselves laugh by switching up how to pronounce Squidward. They're like, Squidward, 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 Squidward. You know,
yeah.
So funny. But bring it around town is so darn funny. It's tough to describe how funny it is. I can describe why Patrick, it's a giraffe, is so funny, but it's difficult for me to describe, Frankie, why Bring It Around Town is so funny.
I think it's because, like, you know, they go back to those classic Comedia tropes of, like, repetition. Mm-hmm. Like, repetition is funny. And so, like, the commitment. You know, like,
yes,
it is just so heavily committed to. Like, it's not like Bring It Around Town. It's like, bring it around town. And it's again, and then it's again, and then you see it again. And it's just like, oh my God, okay, we must go with you on this journey into the ridiculous. Otherwise, we will be left behind. And no one wants to be left behind. We want to laugh at that. So
yeah.
I do think it's just like that classic Comedia trope of, like, go hard and do it a lot of times and your audience will laugh.
I think you nailed it.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready to explore like never before.
Swiper, no swiping.
Oh, man.
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woohoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure on the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we got this.
Todos juntos!
Yay!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Frankie, since you're on a roll here of being able to break down SpongeBob,
okay,
I love listening to you break down SpongeBob.
Okay.
I want to ask, is it possible to try and define Patrick Starr's Patrickness? Because he is one of the, if not the, single best friend character in cartoon history. What makes him such a perfect character and friend for SpongeBob?
I think you just kind of nailed it when you said single cell. I do feel like he is just, he doesn't have a processing center, you know, as starfishes actually don't. They are just one nervous system. Like, they don't actually have a brain. So it's just like their signals come in and then the response is immediate. And I think that's just how he is in the world. It's just so pure. He has no time to analyze. Like, we have that as human beings. How many times do things go into our head and then we think before we respond? Or, like, it goes into somewhere else and we decide, you know what, I'm not going to respond. This Patrick has none of that. It's just see react. And it's because he doesn't process anything. It is just Patrick. That's Patrick to me. I feel like he has no filter, no response time. It's just pure
Frankie
reaction.
I appreciate you bringing Professor Frankie to the table, because I forgot or did not know that about starfish, but it makes sense. As soon as you said that, I was like, oh yeah, that is, I know that to be true. Oh my God, that's so funny that's why they made the starfish the dumb character on the show.
It's kind of funny. I mean, and you know, sponges don't even have nervous systems. They're just like,
now it makes sense.
Okay, Frankie's marine biology corner. Starfishes are echinoderms, and they're related to sea urchins and to sand dollars and sea cucumbers, and they are a special class of underwater invertebrates, and they don't have spines, and they're all kind of related to each other. And sponges don't even have any sort of, you know, digestive system, nervous system. Starfishes do, and they're just, the sponges are periphera. And they actually just kind of rely on the ocean to do all the work for them, so that it just kind of brings them food. It gets rid of their waste. They need the ocean. They need the waves.
Wow.
They need the water. So anyway, that's just, but they also don't have brains. So it's kind of cute.
Hang on a minute. I'm confused. I thought I was doing a podcast here. Am I in a marine biology class for University of California, Irvine? What's happening here?
I would love to go retake and slash go teach in marine biology. Too. I was just scuba diving under the water in Hawaii.
And we got to talk about that. How was that?
It was just so amazing. And, you know, again, like reconnecting with all these underwater creatures, you know, I didn't get to scuba dive for the whole pandemic, you know. I really didn't leave my house, so it was just really magical to go back underwater and see.
Frankie,
all
are you
the
a big are you big
sponge.
Scuba diver? I think that's beautiful. Are you a big scuba diver?
I'm a big scuba diver. Wow. Yeah, I was certified when I was a teenager. So,
whoa,
you know, to get to go back under the water, it was kind of really magical and beautiful to reconnect with all those beautiful things. I did see sea sponges and I did see sea stars. So of course, I thought about this podcast and how excited I am to come back to it.
Beautiful.
And my fiance saw an octopus, which is not a squid, but it is. I mean, Squidward is, I don't know. He looks like an octopus. That's confusing. Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to
on
that.
On a later episode, we'll dissect whether or not Squidward is actually a squid or an octopus. But we'll talk about that later.
We'll get to the bikini bottom of this for sure. For sure. Oh, boy. That's so amazing. That's so much fun. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, it makes perfect sense that the sponge and the starfish of this cast are the dummies, the lovable dummies.
What do you think, Hector, is the most enduring part about this episode? Like, what did we learn here? That
you know, a lot. So basically, every one of these early episodes introduces an element that will be with us for the duration of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it at the top in the descript. You said that this is the first time we get Squidward and his clarinet playing.
Yeah.
So I think it's so cool that built into this character is that, yes, he represents this kind of cynical, curmudgeon-y, grumpy adult type character who's got a job he doesn't love. But I love that he has an artistic side. Now, it doesn't sound so great to us in our ears.
Right.
You know, doesn't sound that great, but Squidward loves it.
Yeah.
And in this episode too, we get little glimpses of things that Squidward thinks are fun. He thinks he's funny when he sees that nobody is at SpongeBob's bubble stand. And he goes, "Business is booming." And he makes himself laugh, and I'm like, "Okay, he is not a complete grumpus. He is not devoid of a sense of humor. We just don't think the same things are funny." But Squidward does believe in having a good time, relaxing, doing stuff that you enjoy. It's just stuff that I'm not interested in.
And I think it's also amazing that like once he does like the bubble prep and then blows the massive bubble, for like a brief moment, he is a phenomenal clarinet player. Like he's like a rock clarinet player. He's like nailing every note. He's doing like these crazy riffs and runs. And then of course that goes away, you know, like because he loses his confidence. So maybe he's got it in him when he's, you know, jazzed up on bubble juice.
That's a great point. And he also loved the adoration he was getting from Patrick and SpongeBob, like chanting his name that he could hear from the window. He's like, yeah, like he was so into it. So it's like he's got these flaws, but he also, you know, yeah, it's like you're saying he's capable of being really talented and having a great time. And there's just his biggest enemy is himself. Come on, let's be real. That's what I love about this show and how they set up Squidward, is that his biggest enemy is not SpongeBob, but it is himself. What great lessons. What great lessons to take. I'd love to point out a little bit of fun animation when Patrick was trying to blow his first bubble.
Oh, God.
It was so
so funny.
And it's that coupled with the performance reminded me of Tea Under the Tree Dome, where SpongeBob was drying out and saying, like, you know, water, please. Like that coupled with the performance, Bill Fagerbakke in this episode trying to blow a bubble. I can't. Yep. It hurts my lips. It hurts your lips to even watch him attempt it. And I thought that the animation was stellar in that little segment. I thought it was so, so funny.
Are they called gross-ups? Did I make that up?
I don't know if you made it up. I think they might be called
like
gross-ups. I mean, those classic kind of like...
Ren and Stimpy.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's what they're called, but I made it up. And if I didn't make it up, then I'm correct. And if I didn't, then we will call them that. I like it. Gross-ups.
Gross-ups. Some of the funniest moments in SpongeBob lore are those gross-ups, and even if this wasn't a full-on gross-up, it had the energy of a gross-up because of the way his little lips were drawn and everything. So that was great.
And also, again, like a commitment to the joke, right?
Commitment.
Like, no, full 100% commitment to the joke. It didn't end for several minutes and we just kept laughing.
Well, apparently This just in, Frankie, they do call them gross-ups on the crew. If you didn't make it up, take credit for it, Frankie, because it's great. It.
I love it. I knew I heard it somewhere when I was walking around on the crew of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. When we were rubbing shoulders with the people that made the show.
Walking through the halls, I must have heard it on one of my water breaks.
I have an unsolved mystery about this episode that I want to ask to see if we can find out. Maybe we can ask somebody who worked on this episode or knows the show.
Okay.
Did Squidward give SpongeBob a fake quarter? Because he like bent it. SpongeBob bent the quarter. But then I'm thinking, wait, was it Squidward who gave him that quarter? Or because we know what Squidward's job is, was it Mr. Krabs who like gave Squidward a fake quarter as part of his payment, as part of his paycheck? I don't know.
And also like, you don't bite quarters to bend them. You know what I'm saying? That's how they tested gold back in the day, and gold was supposed to bend. So that's like all sorts of silliness. So I think that is a great question because none of the other quarters bent. So
yeah, just the one. And it stayed bent when they,
the whole time,
you know,
when they did the wide shot.
You can see all of the quarters there on the table. Yeah, yep, I thought that was a great detail. An unsolved mystery for sure. That is Bubble Stand. A wonderful, fantastic episode. I hope that everybody listening had as great a time as we did watching it, because it was so funny. So
amazing.
I think now we can jump into part two of this.
Oh, please.
Just banger of an episode. This all-star classic. The second part is Ripped Pants.
Yay!
Oh my gosh. So here's what happens real quick in Ripped Pants. SpongeBob is at the beach. He's impressing Sandy with how funny he is, which I think is great. Then Larry the Lobster, first time appearance of Larry the Lobster, invites SpongeBob and Sandy to come lift some weights, not knowing that SpongeBob is not particularly good at that. So after a few unimpressive attempts, our yellow sponge buddy, he rips his pants and he makes everyone laugh. Is that going to get to SpongeBob's head? Yes, it will.
May I help you?
I'll take a banana split.
We don't have that.
That's okay. I already split my pants. Get it?
Tee-hee. Anything else?
How about ripple? No thanks? Already got one.
What did you think rewatching this as an adult? Overall thoughts, go.
I ripped my pants. I couldn't stop laughing. There were so many amazing moments that I have come to associate with SpongeBob, like throughout the years, like especially this weightlifting obsession, which we got introduced to in the pilot with the stuffed animals on his on his little barbell, and something that he just can't do. He couldn't even hold the stick. It was just so beautiful and perfect, but also it was very relatable. You know, I think like, you know, me, I had to do weightlifting in high school, and I will tell you that it was not a wonderful experience for me. And so I maybe like would have loved to, you know, take a page out of SpongeBob book and just become like rip my pants. And then like maybe all of those jocks who were watching me would have been like, ha ha, he's the funny kid. Instead, I was just like, I'm never going to that again. And I'm going to skip weightlifting because I think it's a pointless class. And like, why am I taking weightlifting with the entire football team? So I don't know. I just felt very relatable to me. And so it felt like very much like, you know, he's a other in this situation. And when he becomes a part of it, he gets this taste of what it tastes like to be a part of. And then he's like, I'm gonna keep this no matter what it takes.
Yes. Also relatable. Also relatable as a, from like the performer side of it, right? From getting that taste of the, of an audience. That's what I love about this too, right? You're talking about the weightlifting club. You're talking about one group that SpongeBob is not a part of, but he does something to find a way in. But then we're also talking about the performer side of it and what that can do. I mean, I'm sure that Frankie, you've got stories. I've got stories. The first time when you're a little kid and like you get a laugh, or you make classmates laugh, or you're on stage and like you get a reaction. That's powerful.
Yep.
It's powerful. So this is also a great lesson, I think, to not let that get to your head.
And it's like, also, I was thinking about, like, you know, old time comedy kings and queens who, you know, are on the stage and they're like, you know, it's telling the same jokes and like realizing later in their career that less and less people are laughing at that, at that same punchline. And then they come off and then like, I'm basically thinking of Hacks, you know, and like the you know, the agent comes up and is like, you know, your material isn't funny anymore. And she was like, I used to kill on that stage. And then it's like, yeah, well, it doesn't anymore because you're saying the same things. You need to get fresh material. And it's very, very relatable.
As
a performer, that is very relatable to me. It's the same thing. I feel like sometimes I'm like, I, you know, even when you know, have a catchphrase or something and it just keeps, you know, I'm like, is this funny anymore? Like, I don't even know. Can I sing Shine Bright Like a Frankie at my next one man show? I'm not quite sure. You know, maybe.
Frankie, I think you can.
Okay. All right, I will.
So yeah, catchphrases are definitely fall into that category. I mean, Bart Simpson, I don't think he said don't have a cow past like season 2.
Right.
You know, and they're on season 32 now because it's you know, even a long-lived show like The Simpsons, they knew we can't just have these characters say their catchphrases over and over and over again.
Yep.
They have to retire them for a little bit, maybe bring them back for a great reference, a great joke, and then continue to retire them.
Smart.
So there's just a lot to love in this episode. It ends with a great song, you know, one of the great original SpongeBob songs with this great like you know, you were just there, this great kind
Beach
of 50s
Boys.
Beach Boys Hawaii, like, you know, beach culture, sort of like a surf culture vibe, tiki vibe. I love it. I think it's so great. Really sweet. But
with the misfits, with the outcasts, who just like wanted to be a part of. And then, of course, they get to, you know, very glee, be the stars of everything. They're like, oh,
very
these,
glee.
These like outcasts, you know, came together and made a song. And now they're the cool kids. And everyone's like, oh, we love you. And you said, and why are they the cool kids? Not because they are famous, but because they sang about the truth, which was so beautiful. Be true to yourself is the end lesson and message, which is very beautifully delivered through the song and then through Sandy Cheeks at the end. And she's like, that's it, SpongeBob. And the reason we're so proud of you is because you sang about the truth, which is be true to yourself, and then we will all love you and laugh.
That's also even the great key to great comedy, is that the best comedy is also like
authentic.
The most honest, authentic. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's, you know, that's a lesson when you learn as a kid too. If you are a kid, a young person, and you're like a performer and you're trying to get into the world of comedy, there is something that clicks in your brain where like you think, I'm going to repeat funny jokes. I'm going to do these kinds of impressions. I'm going to do things that I think will make people laugh. And it may, it might. But at one point you start to realize, you're like, oh, the things that make people really laugh at impressions is that you tap into some truth of a person or a persona. And the thing that makes people laugh when you're doing comedy, and I kind of found a little bit of this path doing improv comedy when I was younger, and I eventually did that when I moved to LA and stuff. The funniest improv scenes I had seen on stage, Frankie, are the ones that usually don't even have like an outrageous character, but just like a real honest truth in there. And the audience just loses it. They're like, oh no, this is so real. And it's so funny.
The same thing comes with hosting too. Like for me, you know, like that, if I plan a joke in my head, like it's not going to land, but if it comes to me in the moment, and it just because I'm like up there, like speaking my truth, then everyone is laughing. And that's the best part.
So I think that we're in agreement that the most heartfelt moment, the most SpongeBobby moment of this episode is that song at the end, is the moment with Sandy Cheeks, is the resolution, the great lesson. None of it felt after school special. You know, we've seen that lesson 1,000 times before. Be yourself. We've seen it in everything. But this one, it still works. It's still really great. So that's the most heartfelt moment. Frankie, what's the funniest moment? What's the funniest moment in this episode?
Oh my goodness. Oh my God. I love when he pops over to ask for the marshmallows and then he can't lift the stick with the marshmallows
two
on it.
Marshmallows.
Two marshmallows. And he thinks, and it's just, he's so excited to show everyone, and then he just can't even get it off the ground, and then he rips his pants, obviously. But I love the fact that he tries to impress people, and he goes like, and all of a sudden there's this guy that's just like happens to be roasting marshmallows like, you know, a million feet away, and it's just I laughed so hard. That made me giddy. What about you, Hector?
I kind of have the funniest moment for me is tied into a moment in the show, which is that this episode in particular has a lot of enduring legacy things about it. We have Larry the Lobster being introduced, and he's a classic standby supporting character in the cast. And then we also have some fantastic incidental characters introduced. We've got Perch Perkins. He's a big deal character. He's the sort of on, you know, in the field news reporter.
Yep.
But my favorite, Frankie, my favorite incidental character in the entirety of SpongeBob SquarePants, in the entire SpongeBob universe, is in this episode. And I think it's the funniest moment. And it is a character who has now been known to be called Scooter the Dude, who is the incidental fish character that goes, ha ha ha, that was too funny. You are hilarious, my dude. That guy kills me every time. I learned that he is voiced by Carlos Alazraki, who is Rocco in Rocco's Modern Life, in Reno 911, and he was the voice of the Taco Bell Chihuahua, and he is another voice acting living legend. And he and Tom Kenny were old friends, and Carlos may have been one of the people that got Tom Kenny into voice acting to begin with, which is this amazing, like, what? How did you guys know each other? This is great. So we're going to have to ask Tom whenever we get a chance to talk to him, and hopefully we can even have Carlos on the show, talk to him and just talk about how they sort of got into the world of VO, because they're so, so funny. And there were these great performers, and Tom Kenny had a background in stand-up comedy talking about all of this. But when Scooter the Dude says, ha 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 ha,
it's such a, and you're so right, because that also made me completely giggle and chuckle. And then I, of course, he exists forever and ever and ever now. Mm-hmm. And you get to hear his voice. And I love your knowledge of things like this. That makes me so excited and so happy that you know, like, the inside and outs. Whereas, like, you know, like, I watch and I'm such a huge fan, but, like, you know, the actors and the things. And that's you're just a Hector studied this, by the way, just so everyone knows.
Yes, I did. I'm going to be on Scooter watch going forward. Next time Scooter shows up, we got to talk about it, because he's my favorite incidental character.
I'm excited for my leg. Yeah. I can't wait for my leg. My leg. Ooh, ready for Frankie's fun marine biology corner.
Yeah, what do you got?
So I always was fascinated by the fact that there is an ocean under the ocean, which I think is, like, I was literally like, that's ridiculous as a kid. And then I learned something
Lagoon.
Called, yes,
Blue Lagoon.
Lagoon is an ocean under the ocean. And what I learned is there's something called the Haloclin level, which is actually does exist. There are oceans under the ocean. The salinity factor between the top water and the bottom water is different. And so there's literally an ocean. There's like another line of water. Look it up. The pictures are stunning. It's called Haloclin level, Haloclin, I think.
Blowing my mind, because I thought for sure one of the fantastical elements of the world of SpongeBob SquarePants Bikini Bottom was that there is no ocean under the ocean. That is blowing.
No, there is.
My mind.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I don't know that it can have waves, because it's pretty low down, but there is an ocean under the ocean situation, and that's kind of
unless
cool.
There's also a moon under the ocean, which causes
waves.
Right,
and causes
right.
Yeah, I don't know
well,
about
thank
that.
You, Professor Frankie. I honestly did not know that. That's so awesome. I would love to also find out if in the making of Ripped Pants, if this was a true story to anyone on the crew. Any of the creators, Stephen Hillenburg. I hope Stephen Hillenburg never ripped his pants in public. It is embarrassing. And I would love to know where that idea came from.
Because I literally did. I was the best, because I'm a dancer. So my legs were really strong in the weightlifting class. So like all the like football jocks were like extremely impressed that I could squat a lot of weight. So like I could see that have happening to me while I'm showing off my squats to the football team. This sounds ridiculous, but it is very true. So I would love to know what. Yeah. Yeah, me too. I would love to get to the bottom of what actually caused them to write this episode.
The closest I can think of for me, if I'm going to get real, I had never peed my pants in public when I was a little kid, but I peed my pants at my cousin's house. Almost just as embarrassing, if in fact, maybe even more, because your relatives are there and you're like, no, I peed my pants.
You don't know what to do. I don't know how to put this in the drying machine right now. And like, what do I do?
I don't know how to use a dryer. I'm a little baby kid. I don't know what to do. So funny. I need an adult, and they're all here, and I'm too embarrassed.
So, and those things stick with us, don't they?
They really do. Yeah, I just brought it up on a podcast that maybe millions of people will listen to. Now they know I peed my pants.
oh my God, that is so funny. I don't know. I don't remember my first peeing my pants, but I know it happened. So it happens
to everybody. It happens. Yeah. You hear that, kids? It happens to everybody. It's fine. The trick is to not, if you're making somebody laugh about it, let it go to your head. That's the key thing.
Don't keep peeing your pants during every situation so people laugh at you.
That is the classic episode, Ripped Pants.
Yay.
So much fun. I loved Squidward's, the impression that SpongeBob did of Squidward at the beginning, which was so great. It was so great.
Of course, nailed it. I love that.
I love when these voice actors get to do little send-ups of each other. I think is great. So that was Ripped Pants, a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic episode. Has given us a lot to think about for future interviews and discussions that we get to have. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm going to be on Scooter Watch, Scooter the Dude. Look out, because you're my favorite, and I'm going to be standing you anytime you show up, and Frankie's going to be looking for the My Leg guy.
I can't wait. And also, just live this message, guys. Be true to yourself. Live your authentic life. Like Hector said earlier, if you are an actor or comedian, try to go to the real places, because those are the things that people are going to gravitate towards you the most about, is when you are real, authentic, and true. So a lovely SpongeBob message that I can say I have found rings true in my life.
So the lessons are: find your joy and be truthful. Find your joy, be truthful, let joy into your life. Like Frankie said, thank you so much for listening, guys.
See you next time.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.